Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. Sudan's transitional government is expected to form a new cabinet to include former rebels.
This is an important contribution, the Juba peace agreement, although it is not comprehensive, but at least is a big leap forward toward achieving a complete peace in the country.
And how are students faring on in South Sudan during the COVID-19 lockdown?
Since the lockdown of COVID-19 began, everything turned difficult, especially to us, the students. So I made up my mind and started this business of smuggling poultry bags.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok is expected to expand the country's cabinet from the current 20 ministers to 26 in order to include members of the Sudan Revolutionary Front, a coalition of armed groups that signed a peace deal with the government in Juba. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
In a Wednesday extraordinary meeting in Khartoum, members of the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition said Hamdok should continue to be prime minister during the next phase of the transitional period. Hamdok is tasked with moving the country forward to achieve comprehensive peace, economic reform, and sustainable democratic transformation. Participants at the meeting also resolved to create 6 more ministerial positions to include members of the Sudan Revolutionary Front coalition. The new ministers have yet to be named. Forces for Freedom and Change officials praised Hamdok for his achievements over the last year, including Juba peace deal and expanding Sudan's external relations with the international community. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via phone in Khartoum, Hassan Hajali, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, says Hamdok will continue to be the only candidate at the moment since the coalition is experiencing internal divisions over certain political issues.
For them, it's better to keep Hamdok, although there are so many criticism against him, than to get into another dispute and over who will succeed him. So this is a kind of freezing the dispute over the replacement of Hamdok, actually, than a vote of confidence in his abilities or his performance.
Ali says even though Hamdok's performance has not met expectations of the Sudanese revolutionaries over the past year, he has scored some significant achievements. Apart from Hamdok's role in expanding Sudan's relations with the international community, Ali says Hamdok succeeded in reducing international economic sanctions on Sudan and made progress toward getting the country removed from the U.S. list of countries that sponsor terrorism.
This is an important contribution, the Juba peace agreement, although it is not comprehensive, but at least is a big leap forward toward achieving a complete peace in the country. And the way he managed the relationship with the military component also is another credit.
Ali says Hamdok has also been a key player in reforming Sudan's laws that move the country toward becoming a democracy. He says Hamdok's leadership has been appreciated by many European countries, but notes some of the Sudan's regional allies are working to promote the country's military component more than civilian rule.
Promoting the civilians, meaning consolidating democracy in the country. And democracy, it brings a lot of concern for these Gulf countries. From my own observations, also the Egyptians, they prefer the military. Sisi himself is a military man, so he can communicate better with the military counterparts in the country.
Ali believes the main challenge facing the country now is its deteriorating economy.
We need new programs, new direction for the government to tackle the issue of how to increase the production in the country, how to enhance the capabilities of the Sudanese people in order to increase at least the exports of the country. But the expansion is really a political move in order to accommodate more people in the government.
The transitional period has been renewed for 39 months beginning October 3rd in accordance with the Juba Peace Agreement. Major changes are expected within the Sovereign Council and the Cabinet in accordance with the peace deal. Three more Sovereign Council members are expected to be announced within days by Sovereign Council leader Abdul Fattah al-Burhan, bringing the total to 14 members. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Some South Sudanese analysts say the recent visit by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to Juba has ordained South Sudan as an important, influential player in the regional geopolitics in East Africa. But some of the analysts caution Juba to deal with Cairo in an objective way to avoid being dragged into the current conflict between Egypt and Ethiopia over the Great Ethiopian Dam. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Last Saturday's visit to South Sudan was Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi's first since he became a president in June 2014. President Salva Kiir's office called Juba residents to turn out in large numbers to welcome al-Sisi, a call that received public criticism. Nyaltit Mamer, a policy analyst at the Soot Institute, says al-Sisi's visit shows South Sudan is an important player in the region.
If the head of state of a country like that can come to South Sudan, it means South Sudan is an important player also in the region.
Al-Sisi's visit follows a recent visit by Gedo Ander Gechu, a high-ranking security advisor to Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. For months, Egypt and Ethiopia have bickered over the construction of the Great Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, or GERD. While Ethiopia thinks the GERD will help address many of its economic challenges by providing hydroelectric power, Egypt believes the dam will disrupt water flow to its country, which would turn into economic consequences. Several peace talks aimed at resolving the issue have been unsuccessful. President Kiir has encouraged the two countries to keep talking. Ethiopia has historically been a strong ally of South Sudan, standing by the country during its struggle for independence. Tete Mamer says any position South Sudan takes which antagonizes Ethiopia's interests may harm ties between Juba and Addis Ababa.
When you take that side of Egypt, you are actually going against all these records. And of course, there will be more good things that will actually jeopardize when we do something like that.
Boboya James, a policy analyst at the Juba-based Institute of Social Policy and Research, agrees.
In any case of any bilateral relationships with countries, one thing that needs to come out is basically the interest of South Sudanese in relation to what can they benefit from any bilateral conversation.
Tete Mamer says South Sudan should base its position on the key principle of do no harm to your neighbor.
We put our neighbors first in our foreign policy and the regional countries. Like that, until we reach to the rest of the world.
Both Kiir and al-Sisi emerged from a nearly two-hour meeting to say their talks focused on strengthening ties between the two countries. Al-Sisi said Egypt looked forward to funding projects in South Sudan ranging from water and agriculture to infrastructure. He also said Egypt was looking forward to ensuring maximum utilization of the River Nile waters with South Sudan. Al-Sisi did not elaborate and neither president took questions. James says considering opportunities within the water sector, it's time South Sudan started thinking about using the Nile River to boost production of socioeconomic services to its citizens.
We cannot only talk about water in terms of supporting agriculture, also water for consumption, water for generating hydroelectric power, water for animals, water for other investments. So we needed to find out ways of how bestly can we be able to utilize this water to get South Sudan into peace.
Tete Mamer says by visiting Juba, LCC is trying to send a signal that Egypt is securing its allies in the region. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Social media in Cameroon are heightening political and ethnic tensions unleashed by the disputed 2018 presidential elections. That's according to a report by the International Crisis Group. The ICG says social media platforms, especially Facebook, should better filter toxic content and promote verified pages to reduce the tensions. For VOA News, Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
The International Crisis Group report says Cameroon is already facing serious security challenges and should find a way to ease political tensions and stop offensive language such as ethnic slurs that are causing the Central African state to sink into violence. Are Elvis Ntui, the ICG's senior analyst for Cameroon, says hate speech and inter-ethnic tensions have increased since the October 2018 presidential elections. He says the hate speech problem could endanger Cameroon's stability.
This period has been marked by lots of street protests. The country is currently dealing with a separatist insurgency in its Anglophone regions. Also, the army is dealing with Boko Haram insurgency in the far north of the country, with nearly daily attacks. Cameroon cannot simply afford to allow the ethnic and political tensions it's currently facing to rise to a level where they could constitute intercommunity violence.
President Paul Biya, who has been in power for 38 years, was declared winner of the elections. His victory is still contested by opposition leader Maurice Kamto, who insists he, not Biya, was the winner. Are says Cameroon can avoid a slide into instability by reforming its electoral system.
Crisis Group proposes that Cameroon strengthen its institutions, which are responsible for addressing discrimination and improving its policy of living together. Some of these include discussing with the extra-parliamentary opposition in order to review the electoral system to make it more fairer and more acceptable.
Are says the ruling CPDM party and the opposition should take measures to address the excesses of their supporters on social media, especially Facebook. He adds Facebook should also help to check inflammatory language, provocative content and fake news, which he says contribute to inflaming the ethnic and political tension. Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says there is growing hate speech through social media. He blames opposition parties that he says want to weaken Biya's rule.
The government of the Republic appeals to the majority of the Cameroonian people who have never allowed themselves to be misguided by unscrupulous politicians. The government, through my voice, exhorts Cameroonian men and women at home and abroad to thwart destabilizing maneuvers wherever they come from.
Thursday's report comes at a time when NGOs and journalism groups in Cameroon are warning against the use of media organs to propagate hate speech. Rose Oba, the national coordinator of the Cameroon Community Media Network, says journalists should not be used as propaganda tools.
If you even have an interview where you have attributes of like name labeling that may incite violence, we just come in to advise our members of the Cameroon Community Media Network as well as other journalists to be the first persons to do some kind of censorship around hate speech and fake news. Such words are unhealthy. Such words just come in to incite more violence. And definitely with our main tool, peace journalism, we use it to encourage reporters and editors to encourage a peaceful society.
The International Crisis Group says President Biya should be wary of leaving behind a country riven with fighting and separatist sentiment in Anglophone areas but also by wider tensions endangering Cameroon's relatively amicable inter-ethnic relations. Mokki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, some students in South Sudan find ways to keep themselves busy during COVID-19 related lockdown. Find out what they are doing after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you offer advice to your siblings? If so, what kind of advice?
Yes, I advise my siblings. I tell them to be respectful to everybody, old and young alike.
Yes, I advise my siblings. I tell them not to waste money, but to be careful in the way they handle money. I also tell them to give to people who are in need.
Hard work always pays, and if you work hard, at the end you realize something that you didn't expect. So that's the single piece of advice that I offer to my siblings.
I always tell them to they work hard in school. Then, of course, they should be open in case they want anything or lack anything.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some students in South Sudan have used their time at home during the COVID-19 related lockdown to learn new skills, while others have allegedly involved in smuggling illegal products under the pretext of raising money to pay school fees. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
19-year-old Sinetui student, whom we are calling John to protect his identity, says he was a dedicated student until the government closed schools to prevent transmission of the virus in March. John, who lives in South Sudan's border town of Numeli, says after sitting idle at home for months, he decided to earn some money by crossing the border into Uganda at night to smuggle illegal goods.
And since the lockdown of COVID-19 began, everything turned difficult, especially to us, the student. So I made up my mind and started this business of smuggling polythene bags. Especially, I do this business between the two borders, South Sudan and Uganda, and I don't use the border point. I use my own route because South Sudan government don't allow the importation of polythene bags into the country.
John earns 3,000 South Sudanese pounds per day, smuggling the plastic bags into South Sudan. South Sudan banned plastic bags in December 2015 to help protect the environment. Although the bags are still being used by people in the capital and other parts of the country, police spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin says the ban is still holding.
For us, we have received the order and we were implementing right away from the border. This thing is bad. Yeah, it is still bad. The order is still holding.
Another student who we are calling Peter to protect his identity sells contraband items in Numeli. Like John, Peter says he was forced by his circumstances to smuggle illegal items into South Sudan.
I am happy in this job I am doing because I earn a lot here than staying just at home spending holidays. At least now when schools are open, I can afford everything for myself instead of my parents providing them for me.
Peter, who also earns 3,000 South Sudanese pounds per day, says once schools reopen, he will leave his job and resume his studies. While John and Peter make money smuggling illegal items during the partial lockdown, other students like Oshaya Richard think the holiday season is the best time to learn new skills.
Being just idle like that is not good. At least I should come and just continue with computer trainings. That is why now I'm here, just to get me. I'm doing well with the .com School of Training Computer. Because in this world, you need to know a lot of things. In every office, just you get computers, very important in our life.
James Kwal, another senior 3 student in Juba, says he too is learning computer skills at the training center. He says the course will help him find a job with a non-governmental organization after finishing his secondary school education.
This time I will never get it again, because whenever I finish senior 4, I will look for any job of NGO or I will go to university direct. So I will not go again back to computer course. So this time I will make sure that I do computer course here in .com. So next year, I think I will join a school, so no need for me again to go back to computer course.
Education Minister Awu Denga Chwil announced the reopening of candidate classes, primary 8 and senior 4 in October, with the hope of reopening all the other classes in April next year. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Still on COVID, the world's largest COVID outbreak is in the United States. The virus largely hit urban areas first in U.S., but the current surge is now devastating rural America. VOA's correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
The U.S. is now averaging more than 170,000 new cases a day. This is affecting not only large hospitals in cities, but also smaller ones like Scotland County Hospital in rural Missouri. Chief Nurse Elizabeth Guffey says they are seeing a 30% positivity rate.
That's 1 in 3 patients tested is testing positive. Our increase in hospitalizations is definitely there. Over the last 2 to 3 weeks, we've definitely seen at least half of our patients in the emergency room have been known COVID positive prior to walking through our doors.
People come to the 25-bed hospital from 6 surrounding counties to be treated for farm and sports injuries, chest pains, and the flu. Usually, there is plenty of room. Not now. The small hospital with roughly 6 doctors and 75 nurses among 142 full-time staff is in crisis.
Staffing has been the biggest challenge. You still have all the other things that happen in regular life in addition to now COVID, and we have the majority of our staff are young mothers. So if your kid gets sent home or quarantined or schools go on virtual learning or all of those other situations also affect our ability to bring in staff every day.
Nurses are working extra shifts to cover hospital needs, says Guffey.
Right now we are tapped and maxed out at our resources, and it's very difficult to incur even more patients every day.
Out of more than 13.5 million coronavirus cases in the U.S., the state of Missouri has over 306,000 confirmed cases and over 3,800 deaths, according to a tally by Johns Hopkins University. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
The U.S. Justice Department is investigating a potential crime related to funneling money to the White House in exchange for a presidential pardon. That's according to court documents unsealed in federal court. Gloria Tuso of Reuters reports.
U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell on Tuesday released a heavily redacted order that described what she called a bribery for pardon investigation. Federal prosecutors in Washington said they had obtained evidence of the scheme in which someone would offer a substantial political contribution in exchange for a presidential pardon. About half of the 18-page document was blacked out, with the publicly available version providing few details of the alleged scheme and naming none of the people potentially involved. In August, Howell granted a Justice Department request to view emails between a lawyer and clients, saying attorney-client privilege did not apply, but did not identify who was involved. Government investigators said they had seized over 50 digital media devices, iPhones, iPads, laptops, and memory drives. A Justice Department spokeswoman did not immediately respond to request for comment, but a department official said Tuesday that no U.S. government official is the subject or target of the investigation. The U.S. Constitution grants presidents leeway to pardon people convicted of federal crimes. Last week, President Donald Trump pardoned his former national security adviser, Michael Flynn. That was the first of what is expected to be a string of pardons in Trump's final weeks in the White House.
The World Meteorological Organization reports 2020 is shaping up to be one of the three warmest years on record, and a year in which extreme weather events have wreaked havoc on lives and the livelihoods of millions of people around the world. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The average global temperature in 2020 is set to be about 1.2 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial level. Despite efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere, WMO Director of Climate Max Dilley says temperatures are expected to continue rising.
So what we can expect next year, we can't say if it's going to be the warmest year or not, but 2011 to 2020 was the warmest decade on record. We now have a prediction that there's probably about at least a 1 in 5 possibility of the temperature at least temporarily reaching 1.5 degrees between now and 2024.
That means climate change may be happening even faster than experts predicted. The 2016 Paris Climate Agreement sought to avoid dangerous climate change by limiting average global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius until 2050. WMO describes 2020 as another extraordinary year for the climate. It says extreme temperatures have occurred on land, sea, and especially in the Arctic. It notes temperatures in the Siberian Arctic reached more than 5 degrees Celsius above average. WMO scientific coordinator Omar Baydour says that is particularly serious.
The Arctic part of the world is really suffering major change. We are breaking records after records. The change in the Arctic is not only for the region, but also for the whole global climate system. So anything changing in the Arctic affects also the weather extremes in terms of heat waves.
This year, WMO reports wildfires have consumed vast areas in Australia, Siberia, the west coast of the United States, and South America. It says particularly fierce hurricanes in the Atlantic have devastated several countries in Central America. It reports flooding in parts of Africa and Southeast Asia have led to huge population displacement, destroyed harvests, and left millions of people short of food. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Storm Is Over by R. Kelly.
I was in a tunnel and couldn't see the light. And whenever I'd look up, I couldn't see the sky. Sometimes when I'm standing, it seems like I've been walking for miles. And my heart could be crying, dead in the middle of a smile. But then I climbed the hills and saw the mountains. I hollered help cause I was lost. Then I felt the strong wind. Heard a small voice saying the storm is over.
We've been listening to R. Kelly with the song Storm Is Over. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Downtown in a rush crowd and felt all alone. Every now and then I felt like I would lose my mind.
I've been racing for years and still no finish line. Oh, but then I climbed the hills and saw.